Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
What concerns me is that we have two United States senators in Georgia who are aiding and abetting the effort to literally rob the people of their voices and their votes. The good news is that the people of Georgia have a chance to do something about that right now.
That's the Reverend Raphael Warnock of the famed Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. He is one of two U.S. Senate challengers in the Peach State. Democrats Warnock and John Ossoff are hoping to change the balance of power in the Senate during this historic runoff election. Can they beat incumbent Republican senators Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue? We're breaking down the issues. What is at stake tonight? My guests are Charles Ellison, publisher of BNote.com and author and political analyst Dr. Avis Jones DeWeaver. And you, what do you think? What's at stake? Will things change tonight after the votes are counted? Lines are open. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Avis and Charles, thanks for joining the conversation. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you.
All right.
Hey, Happy New Year, Harold. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. So earlier today, voting manager from the state of Georgia, Gabriel Sterling, we've seen a lot of him this week, he said that the state has accepted more than 1 million absentee ballots and more than 2 million Georgians have voted early in person. This is what he had to say about that today.
That gets us to a total of 3,093,376 votes that are in the bank, ready to go. The one thing I could tell you about that is it means we are standing here today with a record turnout for a runoff.
That's a whole lot of votes, Avis. What does that mean to you?
It means that people are energized and they know how critical this particular election is. The balance of power is in the hands of Georgian voters today, and they have known it. And at the same time, we have amazing organizers on the ground there, particularly Black women-led organizations that have just been killing it, making sure that they reach out to everyone, whether they're urban, suburban, or in rural areas, making sure that they maximize the Black vote. And I am expecting, once again, for the people of Georgia to shock the world tonight.
How about that, Charles? President-elect Biden won Georgia by less than 12,000 votes. We've been hearing a lot about that this week. Does that mean, in your mind, based on these numbers, that the Democrats could do it again? Or does that mean that the Republicans are now more energized to make sure that the Senate stays in Republican hands?
Yeah, that to me, just because Joe Biden won electoral college votes in Georgia, he was able to clinch Georgia, flip it to blue, and doing that for the first time in a very long time, it doesn't mean that that's going to translate down ballot. I want Democrats to win both those U.S. Senate seats. They should, particularly after you look at how Georgia has refined a dark art of voter suppression, particularly in how they created the runoff. The Senate runoff that was created by a Georgia state legislator 50 years ago has this legacy in racist voter suppression. But I just don't think it's going to play out that way, unfortunately. I'm just very cautious. I'm not even cautiously optimistic. I'm just very cautious because of a mix of things. Everything on paper and on the surface looks very good. Democrats have a lot to be proud of. Black voters, Black folks in Georgia have a lot to be proud of. You know, they checked off all the boxes, running two good, decent, solid, telegenic candidates in John Ossoff and also Reverend Warnock. They're raising a lot of money. They've already broke Senate fundraising records. But at the end of the day, you have to ask the question, since white voters are 61% of the Georgia electorate, you have to ask this question. Do they want a Jewish man, and do they want a Black man representing their state in the U.S. Senate? Because for all this talk about New South, the South is still the South. Georgia is still Georgia. We just saw this happen last November with Jamie Harrison in South Carolina. I wanted to see Jamie, just like everyone else, when he broke fundraising records, was checking off all the boxes, ran a superb campaign. But at the end of the day, he lost by 10 points because South Carolina is South Carolina. It's still the South, as much as people want to try to rebrand it. And Lindsey Graham just was able to overcome that because of white voters are still just very much set in their ways.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the U.S. Senate runoff race in Georgia. It could turn the tables, the balance of power in the U.S. Senate if the Democrats were able to take those two seats. What does that mean to you? This isn't just about Georgia. This is about the U.S. Senate, and it is about so much more. If you have a comment, if you have a question, and you want to share your thoughts, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk a little bit about just how important this is. Even Tyler Perry today, Avis, took to social media. He flew to Atlanta to vote today because his absentee ballot did not get there in time. He has the wherewithal to do that. But just is that really illustrative of what we are looking at right now for black voters, for Democrats?
Well, I think that I'm really glad that he went to social media to let people know how important it was to him that he would do that. But I would just say that I do think that it is illustrative of how important this particular election is, particularly to black people, not just in Georgia, but around this nation. But people understand that the future dynamics of political power in Washington are not exclusively held in the hands of the president. We have seen, thank God, a shift of power in a couple of weeks is going to happen. But the challenge is that unless there is not only a House that is willing to work with the Biden administration, but also a Senate that is willing to work with the Biden administration, you will have a Mitch McConnell who will once again don the cape of the Grim Reaper, and nothing will get out of the Senate. And so it will be very, very difficult for a Biden-Harris administration to really move forward aggressively on an agenda that they, you know, ran on and that this nation needs, and particularly that black people need coming off of this catastrophic presidency that we're just getting out of now. And so, you know, I think that was just an example of how important it was to him. And it's because of this understanding of what's at stake that I think it is really creating a situation where we're seeing an overperformance of turnout, not only among black people, generally speaking, but among young black people, among other people of color in Georgia, because Georgia has changed tremendously demographically. This is not just a black and white state. And so because of that, I think that we're going to, I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk. I think it's going to be close, but I definitely think that we have a good chance of seeing two Democratic senators by the time all the votes are counted.
Charles, talk to me a little bit about what a possible change in the balance of power in the Senate could mean, particularly when it comes to judges, because that's, you know, that's one of those things that over the past several years during the Trump administration,
right,
that, you know, the Senate has quietly moved through many of the judicial recommendations, appointees that the Trump administration has brought down. And that could very well be one of the biggest issues at stake.
Right. It is. You know, a lot of people underestimate how, you know, influential the federal judiciary is in this calculus. They really don't, they don't think about it in terms of the federal courts beyond the Supreme Court. You know, we just see this big spectacle of Supreme Court nominees, including the one that just got rushed through a few months ago, but they're not considering all those district courts, appellate courts, and how much power, you know, Republicans have been laser focused on this. Conservatives, white evangelicals, white nationalists have been laser focused on this for years, and that's what all this cheating in elections is all about. That's what the Republican Party does now. And so, you know, the big question mark that, or the big question that's being answered in Georgia today is, who do you, well, first big question here is, one, who do you want running the federal government? Do you want Joe Biden running the federal government, or do you want Mitch McConnell running the federal government? And so, you know, that's the answer we're looking for in Georgia today. And that second big question about the federal judiciary, because Senate Republicans have enabled President Trump to force federal judicial appointments that now constitute nearly a quarter of the federal judiciary, nearly 25% of the entire federal judiciary. That's all those district courts and appellate courts. And also he's been able to also put in a few Supreme Court nominees and exercise some level of control, or help Republicans, conservatives exercise some control over the Supreme Court. So that's why they don't want to, right now, Republicans, even though they're engaged in the spectacle on Capitol Hill that we're going to be watching tomorrow, for the most part, the Republican Party establishment, the conservative establishment, they're kind of done with Donald Trump, because they've already, you know, they've used him up. You know, they used him for what their primary goal was to control the federal judiciary. There's a lot of power in that. People don't realize how much federal court decisions have, how much power and influence that has over the daily lives of people. Just those rulings alone, and on things, on topics that are very personal, things that we tend to take for granted each day.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Georgia runoff election. Those polls closing at 7, but with, if you were in line at 7 o'clock, as former President Barack Obama tweeted today, you stay in line until you vote, because you are still legally eligible to do so. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. So, Avis, here's the thing. One of the things that we have seen over the past several weeks is that a lot of Trump judicial appointees who now sit on various and sundry courts across this nation have turned their thumbs down to the dozens of challenges that he has submitted, his campaign has submitted, in attempts to overturn the election. Does that give you any hope about the judicial appointments, at least as it relates to doing what is right? Or is that just only in something that may, by some people's thought process, those challenges may really kind of be ridiculous and fruitless?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it does not give me any hope at all. You know, what else could they do? I mean, there was literally nothing there. So each of those suits were so ridiculous that they had no choice but to, in essence, laugh them out of court. It was just it was zero there. The challenge that we face looking forward in the next several decades, unfortunately, because most of these appointments were very, very young. Many of them were found to be unqualified, for example, by the American Bar Association. Their only qualification were that they were young and right-wing. When there are cases before those courts that particularly impact our community, things having to do with criminal justice, things having to do with civil rights in a variety of areas, things having to do with voting rights. And we know that what we've seen so far with voter suppression this year, I believe, is just the tip of the iceberg. I believe that as we move forward, they'll be even more brazen with attacking our voting rights. When those types of cases get before these same people, it's my concern that they will be very damaging to the Black community. And so this is exactly why the Senate is so critical, one of many reasons why the Senate is so critical. We've lost so much ground under this administration, and we cannot afford to go forward without being able to in some way begin to perhaps balance that off a bit with a Biden administration and any appointments that he might be able to put in place to sort of bring things a little bit back into kilter in the next few years.
202 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the runoff U.S. Senate election in Georgia, in the Peach State. Probably the most important race in quite some time, short of a presidential election. If you have a comment, if you have a question, what's at stake for this country, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Need to take a break in just a bit, but I want to remind our listeners that you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Inside segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or, and this is something new, you can download the Quiet Storm app to your smartphone. There's great music all day, 23 hours a day, but that 1 hour, the Daily Drum and the Inside segment from 7 to 8, you can hear it in its entirety right on your smartphone. So look, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in 5 seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking about the high-stakes U.S. Senate runoff election in Georgia. My guests are Charles Ellison, publisher of BNote.com, and author and political analyst Dr. Avis Jones-DeWeaver. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher. WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Let's go to Lauren. Lauren calling from Virginia. Lauren, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. Hi. Thank you for taking my call, first of all. I'm concerned because I remember when the celebration was in the garden at the White House of the 198 judges that were installed across this country. And it seems sometimes that we Monday morning quarterback wake up and find out, whoops, how come we weren't aware of what was happening on those levels, as well as you just stated about the importance of what's going to happen, that the world is watching Georgia. But something has to be translated where we get on board at the beginning of the train, not when it's running across our neck, if you know what I mean. That's my concern.
You know,
be informed and educated before the hammer is cocked.
I like that, Lauren. Talk to me a little bit about that, Charles, because the reality is, and Lauren said this so incredibly succinctly, that everybody's talking about running for president.
Yes.
But you need to pay attention to everything. Look, if the dog catcher had to be elected, would you not be concerned about how he treated your dog?
Amen.
So
right.
Talk to me about that, Charles.
It's egregious. It's really egregious what we've allowed when we look back and we realize how President Obama was treated. When I think back to him taking such chastisement for wearing a seal sucker suit at Easter time, and I realize how
I like that
it's
suit.
Egregious what is happening, and yet the colluders are just acting as if it's part four of the course. And it's more than politics. And that's to do with a reprobate mind of not realizing. And I tell you, and I'm very concerned that we are not paying attention. I think about friends that have succumbed to such disadvantages with this COVID-19. And when I think of Mitch McConnell, and he went through polio. He went through polio, and his mother wasn't able while he was a young child. How could he not understand people in medical conditions?
Well, let me see what Charles has to say about that, Lauren, and thank you so much. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with the listener, too. It's and this is why this is something that Republicans have been, you know, very good at and very masterful at over the years. You know, one, they've been leveraging and taking advantage of lack of civic literacy throughout most of the population. You know, that's why we have to look at the entire board, and you've had Democrats playing, for the most part, a strategic game of checkers, while Republicans have been playing chess over the years through a mix of, you know, paying attention to the whole board, like, you know, not just focused in on every 4 years of the presidential elections, but also focused on the state legislatures. We had about 10 opportunities, or Democrats had 10 opportunities last November to flip state legislative chambers, including in Georgia there, and also in Pennsylvania, which would have been huge. They didn't take advantage of that. And so, you know, you have a situation where the majority of state legislative chambers are run by Republicans. Majority of governorships are run by Republicans. Only a quarter of the national population is aware of who their state representative or state senator is. And a lot of times when you ask people, oh, who's your state representative, who's your state senator, they think it's somebody in Washington, D.C. They think it's Congress. It's like, no, pay attention to where your state capital is. The same thing applies to the federal judiciary, not paying attention to when that happens, and then we don't find out about these things until the last minute, because Democrats have, you know, they may do good at mobilization for those big every 4 year, you know, sort of grand political extravaganzas known as presidential elections, but they need to have people focused in on, you know, midterms, congressional midterms. We're probably going to see a situation here where all that high voter turnout in the presidential election last November, that'll probably lower for Democrats, because they aren't as earnest, they're not as concerted in their efforts to mobilize voters during midterms, which are much more consequential, but they're every 2 years. You know, Democrats, they're just not doing that. And so I think here, you know, there's going to have to be a, you know, kind of moving forward. One, Democrats are going to have to get unified and understand, then get started now. The next big spate of elections are in 2022, and not just in Congress, but also in your state legislatures as well. That's something that Democrats have a real problem with. But generally speaking, we just have very low civic literacy. That's a national crisis, just like illiteracy is a national crisis. Mm-hmm. You got 54% of American adults can't even read above a sixth grade level. That all filters into how populations are voting or not voting.
Okay. Lauren, thank you so much for your comment. Avis, I'd like for you to also, you know, share your thoughts, you know, about that as well, because it would seem to me that, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. The presidential elections are, you know, they're sexy. Everybody wants in. This Senate runoff, lots of hype about it, record-setting votes being cast and tabulated even as we speak right now. But why aren't there more people out there like Lauren, more people like, you know, Dr. Avis, Jones DeWeaver, and Charles Ellison, you know, even the working stiffs, you know, the vote still applies to you.
Absolutely. I mean, the power impacts everyone. And the challenge is, are you going to be part of those who are able to have your hand on the wheel of power, or are you going to let somebody else drive the bus? You know, that's really what this is all about. And power is not only held in Washington, D.C., right? In fact, what impacts your life on a day-to-day basis in the most immediate ways is often what happens in your local area, your state and local government. I think the biggest challenge that we find in terms of what happens in these midterm elections, as well as at the state and local level, is that particularly among our community, black turnout in off-year elections plummets. And it would be very helpful if a lot of our key organizations that are great at mobilizing the black community and making people aware of even when these elections are, because they're not as well publicized, they're not as predictable even as presidential elections. So sometimes people don't even realize when an election is going to be, when it's a local election, for example. A lot of those organizations, though, that are great at mobilizing the black community and making them aware of what's going on in their community and really organizing them around pushing through legislation at the state and local level, for example, or changes at that level, they don't have a lot of funding outside of presidential years. And even in presidential years, aside from this year, which was an anomaly, the funding that they get tends to be very, very late in the game. You know, I think a lot of this, what I'm saying here is that we need huge investments in our organizations that are great at at educating the black electorate about how to get mobilized around issues that impact their lives every day and how to vote in between presidential elections, and also how to then also go even further and leave and make sure that their elected officials are held accountable after they get in office. That is not something that's free. It takes investments to make that happen. And when we invest in that, guess what? Over time, that will make our impact in presidential elections that much more powerful, because you will have then built up a momentum that will lead to even greater turnout on election day. That's how Georgia was able to do what Georgia did. It was because there was a continuous investment after the loss of Stacey Abrams when she ran for governor. There was a continual investment in that state in terms of mobilizing, registering people to vote, getting them aware of what was happening and preparing them for that election. That didn't just happen in the last couple of weeks before that election. They had been working on that for a couple of years, right? And so I think we need to understand that this requires a long-term investment in black communities so that we can maximize our turnout and our civic engagement knowledge around how to wield power in our communities at the local, state, and national elections, not only during the presidential periods, but in off-year elections as well.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Icy, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I would like to know, if we only get one seat in Georgia, would the Biden administration consider talking to Senator Bernie Sanders and asking him to go from independent to Democrat to gain control?
That's an interesting. Help me with that, Charles, because I would think no matter what happens, if the Democrats don't have, if it's not 50-50, but I don't know. Don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that he's still, I don't know if that would do or that would make much of a difference, because he already technically caucuses with the Democrats. Definitely that conversation should be had with Sanders anyway on an ongoing basis, since he likes to take advantage of the Democratic Party apparatus. He's been doing that for the past couple of election cycles. You know, doesn't want to register as a Democrat, wants to remain independent, but, you know, he's ready to do it when he's ready to take advantage of all those resources the Democratic Party has to offer. And it creates all of this dissension within the party while he's at it. But I do feel like conversations should start taking place with Republicans who are already showing a lot of dissatisfaction with the direction of their party. Maybe start having that conversation with someone like Senator Mitt Romney. There are a couple of Republicans there who are of sound mind, or appear to be of sound mind. So, you know, Mitt Romney comes to mind, Ben Sasse in Nebraska, although, you know, not so sure about what his political future looks like. But, you know, kind of saying, okay, well, would you be willing to come over to our side? Because of, you know, the sort of dark and sinister things that are happening on the current side that you're in right now. Because the Republican Party is pretty much a machine of cheaters and folks who are doing everything just short of outright treason, according to certain provisions in the Constitution. I mean, what's happening tomorrow on Capitol Hill is really seditious. Is just short of outright treason and rebellion. And those are things that are clearly defined and laid out, and they're violating clear provisions in the Constitution. So that's something that Democrats need to explore. Democrats need to get a lot more shrewd in how they play this than they have been typically when we have, you know, these sorts of splits that are happening in the Senate chamber. They're going to have to figure out a way to also, right now, I mean, they should be doing this now, how do you circumvent the power that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has? I mean, the Senate Majority Leader, that position is not even in the Constitution. So how do we, you know, first understand that this is not a constitutional position, the Senate Majority Leader, so this one man should not have so much power to run the government. How do we circumvent that? I think Democrats are going to have to start kind of borrowing some pages from the Republican playbook tactically on how to circumvent, how to also, you know, kind of explore out-of-the-box creative ways to play good offense. So that can mitigate a lot of the harm that Republicans have been doing to Democratic institutions.
I see. Thank you so much for your question. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to piggyback on something you just said, Charles, that I think is really important. And certainly, Avis, I'd love to hear your thoughts about it as well. This has to do with, as you mentioned, what's going to happen tomorrow when we are talking about the certification of the Electoral College votes and this dissension being led by Ted Cruz, for example, who years ago, when President Obama was in office, he was always talking about being a strict constructionist when it comes to the Constitution and on and on and on. And while I may not certainly be willing to go so far as to call the Republicans cheaters, but I will say that in this particular atmosphere, it would seem to me, and maybe this is six of one, half dozen of the other, Charles, the strict constructionists are only strict constructionists when it is to their advantage.
Right, when it's convenient for them. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. And, you know, I think Democrats, one real quick point here, Democrats have to understand two things. One, they need to accept and embrace that they are the party of black and brown people. They're a coalition. and so older white establishment Democrats need to now allow the black electorate, the Latino electorate, that coalition to run that party. So that's one. And two, they understand that they need to also understand there is a political war going on. Republicans understand that and are waging it. But there is a political war also being waged by, and let's be real about this, white nationalists. And yes, and they are outright cheating. I mean, this is the way that they conduct themselves and operate politically, not just at the national, federal level, but we're seeing it on the state level as well. Look at what happened in the Pennsylvania State Senate just several hours ago, with the Pennsylvania State Senate, run by Republicans, outrageous, just ejecting the Democratic lieutenant governor because they didn't want to swear in someone who had been duly and legitimately elected as a Democrat into the state Senate. So, you know, that's their game book now. And so, you know, that's war. And Democrats have to learn that that's what's happening now. It's not just something that's going to pass. And, you know, it's just a phase that Republicans are going through. And I think if they operate in that kind of mindset and that new paradigm, they're able to make some wins and also be a lot stronger in 2022.
Well, Avis, what are the Democrats missing? If Charles is correct and that the Republicans are waging war, what are the Democrats missing other than the numbers in the Senate, for example?
Well, once it is that warrior mindset. I mean, I would say that Democrats want to govern. Republicans want power by any means necessary. Hmm. And that's the difference between the two. Obviously, I would even go further. It's not that Republicans are cheating. They are traitorous. They are criminal in their behavior. And they lie. And they have built an entire propaganda ecosystem that is specifically meant to amplify their lies, so that they can get away with stealing power or attempted efforts at stealing power, which is what, for example, we're seeing right now with the ridiculousness that Donald Trump continues to do. And so these two parties do not have the same interest at heart. I think what the Democrats need to understand is they keep wanting to romanticize the idea that this is a democracy and why aren't they acting in ways that are in line with democratic ideals.
Yes.
What they refuse to see is they don't give a damn about democracy. They really don't. They don't want a democracy. They want an autocracy. They need to understand the truth of the matter. This is the death of democracy. We are watching it right now. And the Democrats are still sort of in this romanticism of why aren't they following the rules. Why aren't they going by what's in the Constitution? They don't give a damn about the Constitution. They have shown that over and over again. And so when you are, you cannot have a system where one side plays by the rules and the other side doesn't. You know, this has got to be a moment in which the Democrats begin to, you know, get shed the scales off their eyes and fight for this nation. If they truly care about democracy, they're going to have to fight for it. And you're not going to have, and you're not going to be able to fight for it in the traditional ways, because that boat has sailed. These people are moving forward in a way that is trying to put in place a dictatorial system. And I will just tell you one really quickly why that is. There was a study out of University of Texas, and they did a survey of whites in this nation who held racially intolerant beliefs. And what they found was that whites who hold racially intolerant beliefs are more likely to favor an autocratic system than they are to favor a democratic system. And what's happened right now is that those in power understand the ticking of the clock as it relates to the demography of this nation. Georgia isn't the only place that's flipping demographically right now. The South is flipping. The nation is flipping. We are becoming a majority people of color nation. And so what they are trying to do is they understand that when the majority of people in a democracy are not white, then they will have the power to win elections. And that's why they're doing everything they can to undercut democracy. Because at a moment when people of color can actually be advantaged with democracy, they'd rather kill democracy than to have their power usurped in any way.
Well said. I must admit that in asking this rhetorical question, this eloquent rhetorical question of what's wrong with folks? that's the question that I've been asking, for the past 2 to 4 years, maybe 8 years, when your mother tells you don't lie,
right.
Be honest, tell the truth, shame the devil. And when you have... you remember during the 1990s, that whole family values mantra that the Republicans were spouting so much, and that has been, if you'll allow me, bastardized by the Tea Party and so many others,
right.
As the Republicans have moved, out of the 90s into the 2000s, and look at where we are, and it's kind of like when you listen to some of those members of Congress that are planning to not support the Electoral College certification on tomorrow, and you watch these debates on TV, and you have well-intentioned truth speakers say, no, that's not true, no, this isn't true, like Gabrielle Sterling, a Republican in Georgia yesterday and today, constantly speaking, no, this isn't true, and his frustration, and yet, as Avis was just saying, you have these Republicans who are saying that it may appear to be, but because I want what I want,
right.
I'm not going to pay attention, Charles.
It's funny with the Electoral College objections that are taking place tomorrow. Before they loved the Electoral College because it was in Donald Trump's favor. Now, fast forward to 4 years later, they don't like the Electoral College because look at what happened. Those key Electoral College states that Joe Biden won was a result of black voting blocks, places like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania was Philly, which is a pretty much a majority black city. In Wisconsin, it was Milwaukee. It was Detroit and Michigan. So now, suddenly we realized, or black voters as a block realized, oh, wait, the Electoral College if we really kind of play a game of chess here, the Electoral College can be an HBCU. We can make this work for us. And that's exactly what happened in November. At the end of the day, there's real social, cultural, economic value. I mean, a country's GDP actually grows the more multicultural it becomes. But, you know, white conservatives, white nationalists, and just, you know, a lot of average white voters out there who typically vote Republican or vote for those kinds of candidates and who vote based on racial animus, they don't see it that way. They just see it as the more multicultural a society becomes like this one, that's more competition for what they're saying is scarce resources, resources that they have always commanded and they've always controlled. And they don't want to give up that control, that luxury, that privilege. And that's what this is all about at the end of the day.
What concerns you the most about tonight, Avis?
What concerns me the most is the possibility of losing one of those seats, because Mitt Romney will every once in a while, he'll say the right thing. He'll do the right thing. We can count on a couple more, but I just know that if we do not get at least a 50-50 split, given Vice President Harris the ability to break the ties, what this administration will be able to get done, at least for its first 2 years, will be severely undercut. So we need both of those seats, and we need them badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What concerns you the most about tonight, Charles?
About tonight and how Georgia is, you know, look at the level of voter suppression. I know everyone wants to induct the Georgia Secretary of State into the Justice League. He's been playing voter suppression games for a long time in Georgia. And so we have to look at mail ballot rejection rates, the number of early polling sites that have been closed. There have been about a couple of 100,000 voters have been purged up to this runoff. So I'm worried about how that translates. I want to be wrong. I want to be optimistic about Georgia. It's just very hard to, and I don't know. I'm not really optimistic about how things are going to pan out. If Democrats don't win in Georgia, it's just going to be a very tough slog for the Biden administration. I worry about 2022 and 2024 after tonight.
Interesting. Well, I do want to give you a bit of an update. The night is still young, but right now in Georgia, Reverend Warnock is leading Loeffler 54% by 46% of the vote that has been counted, and Ossoff leading Perdue by 53%. 53% to 46%. Again, the night is still very young, and there are many votes to count. And to be quite honest, there has always been this speculation that we may not know, as was the case during the presidential election, we may not know tonight. We may not know until maybe at the very earliest tomorrow. But that's the way things are looking right now. But again, the night is certainly early. But beyond tonight, what is the charge from your perspective, Avis? Win or lose for progressives moving forward, or are we still going to see some nastiness between now and January 20th?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a very dangerous time that we're in right now, a very precarious and a very dangerous time. There is evil that inhabits the White House. I'm just going to be very, and he's desperate. And desperate and evil is a bad combination. My concern is that this is a dangerous time. But at the end of the day, my hope is that even if we aren't able to pull through with both of those wins tonight, that as always, we keep going. We are a history of people who keep going. And I'm hoping that people will be energized not just to continue to mobilize and register and vote in every election. I'm hoping that I'm looking at a lot more energized progressive candidates. You know, I hope that this really inspires more people to run. You know, I think that we not only have the hands that can select who's in power, I think we can ourselves be more of those in power. So at every level of government. And so I'm hoping that is one way that we start to sort of unpack what's happened in these last 4 years, because we've got to replace, we've got to do a lot to replace all of the damage that's been done by 4 years of a Trump administration.
Last comment, Charles, 15 days until January 20th. What do you think will be the predominant issue between now and then?
Right. It's the level of the current president, Donald Trump's corruption and criminality, and what we do about that. How do we hold him accountable over the next 14 days? How do we kind of, also kind of keep that as controlled or as contained as possible between now and January 20th? Because a lot of these maneuvers that are happening that we're seeing unfolding are just very concerning. But, we keep, as Dr. Avis is saying, we just keep moving on. We keep going forward. There are a lot of creative out of the box things that we could be doing politically to avoid catastrophe. Yeah. And I'm still confident about that.
Well, we will continue to watch tonight and tomorrow. It will be interesting. Charles Ellison and Dr. Avis Jones DeWeaver, thank you both for talking to us. Stay safe. We're still in a pandemic. Good to talk to you. Happy New Year to both.
Hey, Happy New Year. Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.